October 4th. Good morning. I'm going to go ahead and call the Coachella Valley Conservation Commission meeting to order for Thursday, October 4th, 2021. I will remind you today is National Dessert Day, so feel free to partake in whatever decadent dessert you enjoy the most. Just a reminder that we are doing a virtual meeting in accordance with the state of emergency for the COVID pandemic. And of course, we have teleconferencing and telephonic access as well as written for public comments. And at this time, we'll go ahead and Tricia, clerk, call the meeting to order, please. And roll call, please.
Okay, Cathedral City.
Rita Lamb here.
Coachella. Coachella Valley Water District. Desert Hot Springs.
Present, Gary Gardner.
Imperial Irrigation District. Indian Wells.
Tommy Griffith here.
Indio.
Oscar Ortiz here.
La Quinta.
Present, Mayor Evans.
Mission Springs Water District. Palm Desert.
Lynn Kelly here.
Palm Springs.
Present.
Rancho Mirage.
Richard's here. Richard Kite.
Richard Kite, Rancho Mirage.
Thank you. Riverside County District 1. Riverside District 2.
Present.
Riverside District 3.
Here, Harnick for Washington.
Riverside District 4.
Here.
Riverside District 5.
Russ Martin, alternate for Supervisor Jeff Hewitt.
Thank you. We have a quorum.
Okay, and I don't think Kathleen Fitzpatrick, she's representing District 2, correct? It didn't seem like it sounded off. All right.
Yes.
Present. Wonderful.
I'm here, Linda. Also, Glenn Miller, District 1.
District 1. Oh. Great. Oh, thank you. All our districts represented. Perfect. Okay, at this time, we'll move on to public comments on agenda items. Do we have any requests to speak? I don't see any raised hands, but I know staff is also watching.
Yes, we did have a raised hand from Randy Binder.
Okay, and let's go ahead and provide him access, unmute him. Good morning, Randy. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Randy Binder, board member with the Bighorn Institute. I'm here to listen to item number 6A, Dr. Barrow's efforts with his project, and also item 7E, the progress report on the Bighorn fence project. And I'd like to congratulate Mr. Kirk on his hiring of Jody Ross-Borrego and remind you all that the Bighorn Institute dinner and gala and golf tournament is at Stone Eagle on Sunday and Monday, November 21st and 22nd. I'll email the invitation to Tom and hopefully he can forward it to you guys. And in a little bit, I'll be off to fill my civic duty doing jury duty and go Dodgers. And it's nice to see my friends. Thank you. These friends, not at court.
Not at court. Thank you. My CEO just was released, but she indicated that the judge said the next panel that afternoon that was going to start getting questioned was for a case that is projected to last until March of 2020.
Oh, come on.
New courthouse. So good luck, Randy.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding. Any other requests to speak at this time?
We did not get any emailed comments.
Okay. And I see that Alex has joined us from IID. Welcome. Okay. With that, we'll move on to Commissioner Chair and Director announcements. I'd like to call upon our Executive Director, Tom Kirk, first for the introduction.
Yeah, I only have one announcement, and Randy mentioned it. We do have a new staff person here at CVAG, Jody Ross-Borrego. And for those of you that attended the Energy and Environment Committee meeting last month, you got a chance to meet Jody and hear a little bit from her. We've turned on her video. And Jody, will you introduce yourself to the commission here?
Thank you, Tom. Greetings, Chair Evans and members of the committee. I'm really honored to be here and to support CVC and CVAG. And I do realize that I have some fairly large shoes to fill, but I'm very much looking forward to supporting this committee. A little bit about myself. I've lived here in the Valley for 15 years, working as a biologist. I had the pleasure of working with my previous firm for 16 years, but it was time to make a change, and I'm just very happy to be here and looking forward to supporting the Energy and Environmental Department.
Excellent, excellent. Great background, and already has jumped in with both feet and is working hard. So appreciate the fast ramp up. Alex, do you have a comment? You'd like to unmute you. There you go.
No, I don't know what happened. I got booted out, but I'm back in.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very good. Welcome again, Jody. Any other comments from the commission members?
I'm here.
Right. There you go. All right, we've got Mission Springs in the house as well. Okay, with that, we'll move on to our consent calendar. There's a number of items, A through H. Questions or comments on any of the items?
Move to approve, Desert.
I'll second that, Madam Chair. Alex Cardenas.
All right, so motion by Palm Desert, second by IID. All those in favor, please. Do we need a roll call for this, or can we do? We can do that. All those in favor, please say aye and wiggle your fingers.
Aye.
Aye.
As aye. Anything, anyone opposed or abstained? Seeing none, we'll have that motion pass unanimously. And for the record as well, Mayor Steve Hernandez from Coachella is also in attendance at the meeting. Very good, thank you. We're moving on to section six, which is our discussion and action items. And a highlight today is the presentation on the biological monitoring program from Dr. Cam Barrows and Dr. Lynn Sweet. And Tom, before we have them come on board, let's do our thing, and you can start off with the news.
Yeah, and we've talked about big shoes to fill. The Barrows family both have big shoes to fill. And as most of you know, Katie Barrows worked here at CVAG for well over a decade, and she retired last month. She is still here helping us part-time with Desert Community Energy. And Dr. Cam Barrows has retired from the University of California, and the two of them are going to enjoy retirement here in the Coachella Valley, and I think in a somewhat alpine environment in northern Arizona, right, Cam?
When the summers get a little bit too warm, we'll be up in Flagstaff.
Yeah, and Cam's going to give you a presentation. He's also going to introduce his successor at UCR, but just for those that may not realize how long Cam has been at this and the great strides we've made because of Cam and a scientific team, let me share with you that he came here in 1996 to run the Coachella Valley Preserve and fell in love with the desert, like many of us did. And when he became associated with UCR, he was a member of the Scientific Advisory Committee that really shaped the plan that we have now. And again, for those that haven't seen the presentations that Cam has given, he does a fantastic job of relaying scientific information to the rest of us in a very simple and understandable way, and relaying how important our desert ecosystem is. And for those from perhaps greener locations, they perhaps look at the desert as a relatively sterile place. Cam's convinced us all that the desert is a vital place that's really important for biodiversity in this part of the world. And he's been a fantastic leader and steward of the desert ecosystem, particularly the sand environment here. We're gonna miss him. And I know not only will we miss him, but those in the Joshua Tree community will too. He just received the Minerva Hoyt Award from Joshua Tree National Park Association. So Cam, before you get started, let's give Cam a little round of applause. Let's put your speakers on and your microphones on. We will miss you, and we know you'll be back periodically, perhaps in other forms and representing other interests here. But thank you so much for all the work you've done here.
Absolutely. All right, and we're going to turn it over to you.
Well, you're very welcome. I did want to mention that the university has this final status that's called emeritus, which means I can continue with the university and continue to do all the projects that I love to do. The only glitch in that is I don't get a paycheck. That's all right. That's fine. But one of those projects that I love and want to continue is with the multiple species plan here in the Coachella Valley. So I'm going to share my screen here. There we go. I think I may have misheard Tom a little bit. He said I started here in 96, actually it was 86. So I've been here 35, 36 years, something along that line. And I just wanted to start out by giving you all a little bit of a history of what's transpired in that amount of time. One of those things, of course, is that we've had a succession of directors of CVAG. And when I came here, Lester Cleveland, the fellow on the left there, was the director of CVAG. And under his supervision, we created the very first habitat conservation plan that had ever been created in the entire United States. It had just a year or two before then been approved by an amendment to the Endangered Species Act, the Federal Endangered Species Act, that such things might be possible, but nobody knew how to do it. Nobody knew how to put it together. And so the Coachella Valley was essentially the experiment to see how it could work and if it could work. And as you all know, it did very well. When I got started there, I was director of the Coachella Valley Preserve, which is out there in Thousand Palms area. Corky Larson was the county supervisor for this area, and UC Riverside, through one of our professors, Dr. Bill Mayhew, worked with Corky to help her understand the importance of conservation and the importance of this kind of habitat conservation plan. Corky was, at the time, as you all know, she came from a farming family. They were very conservative, and she just didn't understand why we were making a fuss about a lizard, why we were going in that direction. But Dr. Mayhew convinced her, with not a whole lot of trouble, that the open space areas of the Coachella Valley, the preserve areas, the hillsides, would be looked upon in some point in the future as does New Yorkers think about Central Park, something that they cherish and value above and beyond almost anything else in their cities. And I think that prophecy has really come true, as you all know, that the visitors and the residents of the Coachella Valley use our hiking trails and visit the protected areas more than they do any other activity here in the Coachella Valley. And so we have collectively created something that has made us stand out more so than any other place in the deserts and perhaps the United States in terms of the values we've protected. So that happened in the 1980s. 1986 was when that plan was actually created. In the 1990s, I came to realize that that plan, as wonderful and groundbreaking as it was, actually didn't go quite far enough, not only for the fringe tailed lizard, but for the rich biodiversity of the Coachella Valley. And so we started talking with Corky, who was then the CVAG director, and she sort of opened the door and said, okay, what do we need to do? And so we started talking about something that, again, was fairly innovative, something called a multiple species habitat conservation plan. But I can remember at that point going to Ed Kibbe. Ed Kibbe was the director of the Building Industry Association for the Coachella Valley, and sort of going to him and said, you know, Ed, you were incredibly helpful in getting that fringe-tailed lizard plan created in 1986, but it looks like we're going to have to open the door again because that didn't go far enough. We need to do more. And I expected him to just say, you know, a deal's a deal. You lost. Sorry about that. But Ed did exactly the opposite. He said, you know, the Building Industry Association and everybody in the Coachella Valley invested a huge amount of their own capital in making that plan work. And if it's not going to work, then let's make it work. And that really opened the door for us to entertain this idea of a multiple species plan. That led us to the John Woolmuth era through the late 90s and into the 2000s. And the primary thing that John did more than anything else was he hired my wife. And at that point, the trajectory of this multiple species plan was completely floundering. It had become a battleground between the federal and state agencies and the CVAG and the biologists here and trying to come up with a solution that would meet everybody's needs. And rather than continue that adversarial role, Katie then turned it around and said, we're going to be partners in this. And as soon as she got the mindset to shift from being adversaries to partners, within 2 years of her arrival at CVAG, the plan was signed, which was in 2008. It was pretty amazing that she was to do that. And today, of course, we have Tom Kirk. And Tom has the unenviable position of not having a new plan to create. He has the unenviable position of making sure that the existing plans work. And that's really tough because it's a year-to-year slog. It's not, you know, let's look for that final thing. And once we're done with that, we're done, because this is something that goes on and on and on. And Tom has done an excellent job of supervising that process and having somebody like Kathleen Brundage actually lead the way in terms of making sure those year-to-year, day-to-day activities get done. So we did the fringe-tailed lizard plan in 1986 and the multiple species plan, which of course includes 11 birds, 5 plants, 4 mammals, 3 reptiles, 2 insects, and 1 fish, which is great. And it's something that we should all be patting ourselves on the back. But I really want to make sure that each and every one of you, whenever this topic comes up, is that you emphasize that this was not just to protect some lizards and plants and animals. This was to protect the sustainable economic future of the Coachella Valley. And in doing that, we've made sure that every single city and the county of the Coachella Valley has an economic future in terms of development within their jurisdictions. Had these plans not happened, each and every plan could have been scrutinized by the Sierra Club or any of the other environmental watchdog groups. And in doing so, they would have slowed down and even stopped some of the potential development that has happened and continues to happen in the Coachella Valley. So I think I just want to make sure that none of you forget that. I may not be here in the future to remind you, but I want you to understand that this is not just for animals and plants, it's for people and our economic future. So real briefly, part of that ongoing slog is to make sure that the plan is working from a biological standpoint. I'm going to show you a bunch of graphs. And the only thing that really is important about these graphs is that there is not this tailing off or we started at a high point with high densities, high abundance of species, and now they're at low abundance. In fact, it's just the opposite. We see year-to-year ups and downs, but the populations are stable and sustainable within plan. And so from fringe-tailed lizards to flat-tailed horned lizards, to round-tailed ground squirrels, to Palm Springs pocket mice, all of these species that are protected within the plan, and of course, 21 other species, they are all doing extremely well and stable within the plan area, which is fantastic. And on top of that, all of the cities are continuing to develop as the economy allows. So on both sides of the equation, both in terms of biology and in terms of the economy of the Coachella Valley, the plan has been a resounding success. One of the other interesting species that we work with is a species that's almost endemic to the Coachella Valley. It's not quite, the Little San Bernardino Mountains, Melanthus. And this is a species that we didn't put a scale in this picture, which is unfortunate, but each and every one of those flowers is less than a quarter of an inch across. This is a giant plant that they never get this big usually in nature. But usually they're individual flowers that look exactly like the grains of sand and gravel that surround them. And what we've been able to do is develop the expertise and sort of the vision to be able to find this plant, which has been very challenging in the past. These are some maps that show its distribution primarily in the Desert Hot Springs area. And so this is Desert Hot Springs. This is Highway 62 coming up here. And these colored areas, we call them polygons, are areas that look like they would be suitable habitat. And the dark circles here are where they have been found and are continuing to be found. One of our questions has been that people in the past have said it requires some level of flooding for the plants to be established. And so far we found that not to be true. Even in the driest year we've had in recent history, which is this in 2021, Dr. Lynn Sweet and her team have been able to find these. And so you can see the map on the right here, you can see some of the locations that she's found them this year. Not only that, but she has been able to find them in new locations. This is the Snow Creek area. And the blue dot here is a known location, but she and her team found them at a new location. So we're finding that the population, whether it's expanding or not, we're at least showing that its full distribution is much larger than we expected it to be. The plan is doing well, but there are ongoing and looming threats. One of those is off-road vehicles. And, Kathleen Brundage is working really hard to get more and better law enforcement so we can control some of those off-road vehicle threats that are going into the protected areas, illegally going into these protected areas and tearing up the habitat. Another one is invasive species, and this is not going to go away, but from Sahara mustard to a new one that's just showed up that has the unenviable name is stinknet, but stinknet is showing up in it, and it's potentially going to be another problem, and some invasive grasses. And so this is an ongoing effort that is going to take a lot of science, it's going to take a lot of management to be able to keep it under control. And then the other one, and one that I chatted with you, some of you, when I chatted with the Energy and Environment Committee last month, is climate change. And that's something that we didn't really address very well in the design of the multiple species plan. We assumed we did the best we could with what we had. And so what I'm going to do is flip this over to Dr. Sweet. She will be my successor here, or she is my successor here. She did her PhD at UC Riverside on invasive species, but since then, she's not only been interested in invasive plant species, but also very interested in understanding how climate change is going to impact animals and plants in the desert. And one of her most recent papers is really an extremely important paper that shows that protecting Joshua trees in places like Joshua Tree National Park works fine even with climate change unless we choose not to do anything and just continue in terms of ameliorating the carbon footprint that we've created for ourselves. If we do absolutely nothing, even Joshua tree will lose their Joshua trees in the future. But if we do even a little bit, there will be part areas in Joshua trees where the species will be able to sustain themselves. So I wanted to turn this over to Dr. Sweet and let her talk to you about some of the efforts that she's focusing in on in the near future when it comes to climate change and with the multiple species plan. So Dr. Sweet.
Thank you, Cam. I've had the pleasure of learning from Cam, getting my boots dirty for 5 years. I got here in 2015 after a postdoc at UC Santa Barbara. So I've been having a great time learning about desert ecology, and I'm honored to be speaking to you today. So I wanted to talk a little bit about ongoing work that we will be doing along with CVCC. This is a new project funded by CDFW that we'll be collaborating with CVAC on. And so this is to really look at creating climate resiliency within the plant area. This is similar to many efforts statewide, following along to discover, you know, what changes, what might we see that we could attribute to climate change. And the goal is to really evaluate the vulnerable species we have and the conservation areas we have for climate resiliency. And so essentially the plan was already designed to conserve, restore, and manage sustainable populations of the plant species. There's a lot of work that went into designing the plan to do so. And it's intended to provide for population fluctuations already and to conserve a range of environmental conditions that's already built into the plan. So the goal of this project is really to address, you know, how much resiliency do we already have in the plan? And what might we do? So if we are out biological monitoring, looking at the various covered species, if changes are detected, we have to know if we can attribute those changes to a short-term drought, to climate change, or a failure of us, the management, to control a threat, such as habitat fragmentation, invasive animals or plants, OHV, unauthorized OHV use, or edge effects. So this is really meant to see what changes might occur and be able to attribute them properly when we see them. Okay, so next slide. All right, so this is just a look at maximum summer temperatures. So when I'm talking about species and resiliency, we can imagine that they occur in a particular place in the landscape. So imagine, this is just an example, environmental variable temperature. Imagine that species occur in a particular band, you know, this bird or this plant occurs in, you know, light orange or yellow in this map. And so this is where we might expect the species to occur today if it was just simply based on temperature. And we won't pay attention to the scale here. This is just to get an idea of, you know, sort of species movement with climate change. And by the way, the white outlines are the plan area and the conservation boundaries. So it's a temperature map running from orange, you know, hot color, down to the cool colors in the green. And if you go to the next slide. And so this is looking at later this century under one highly mitigated scenario, under one model from the IPCC-based projections. And so you can imagine if there was a species, one of those temperature bands, we might see that species move, you know, we might see it move uphill, upslope, into a different direction, potentially increase in elevation or northward. And then one more look at, if you want to change the slide. So we have to look at, unfortunately, several scenarios. So this is one scenario that would be based on continuing emissions as they are today at end of century, RCP 8.5. So this is another look at where those temperatures might occur in the future. And we want to be prepared for all of these things. That's our job. So this is another look at that. And then next slide. And it might not be as simple as species A or B moving simply northward or upslope. We might actually have to look at species that might use the already existing topography and watersheds within the valley to seek refuge with climate change. So we might see species move down into a watershed. We might see species shift onto a different slope to track their particular environmental conditions that they like. So this is the job of environmental and habitat distribution models to really tease out these factors of precipitation and temperature and so forth. So this is our job to try to understand what those species movements might be. Next slide. Oh, there should be one more picture, but we could just go back to the last slide, that's fine. Okay, so really, you know, so the goal of this project, it's a 2-year project that we're going to be trying to understand the distribution changes of these species, trying to discover whether there's resilience already built into the plan and where they abut other protected areas, for instance. And we really want to understand better what those changes are if we see trends occurring. So if we see decreases in a covered species, we want to properly understand why that's happening in order to better manage those areas and to determine the cause of fluctuations. So that's the goal with this. It's an ongoing project. It'll be based on the biological data that we have collected over years and years. And and I look forward to continuing to work again on biological monitoring with the team and continuing in the science advisory capacity as well. And that's it.
Thank you very much. I see a hand raised from Mayor Hernandez with questions or comments. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And Cameron, thank you for all the great work that you've done throughout the years. I've had an opportunity to serve alongside you and as well as with many of the executive directors that were highlighted earlier regarding this plan. I'm wondering, as we initiate the study and really kind of look at the species movement and the resiliency, what might we be able to do as a body to try to kind of slow climate change? Obviously there's been a lot of focus on emission reductions, etc., but I do know that there is a somewhat efforts going on throughout the world that is really focusing on trees and planting trees to try to absorb that carbon, try to create micro environments, as well as try to make it easier for humans, because if the species are going to migrate, well, humans will migrate as well, simply because it's going to get really hot here in the basin, as we know that. I mean, this summer was really, really hot. And I've talked to just a lot of people about, them starting to change their patterns and wanting to even move up into the hills, et cetera. So as we think through all of this, I'm wondering, what can we do as humans to maybe try to slow things down in some ways as this study gets initiated and going?
That's a great question and very thoughtful in terms of what the future looks like. When I had a chance to talk with the Energy Environment Committee a month ago, we did talk quite a bit about this, because while we care about how climate change is going to impact the animals and plants that are found here in the Coachella Valley, we equally care about how it's going to impact people. And a lot of people who live in the Coachella Valley will grumble about it, but they can turn their air conditioner up a little bit higher and a little bit higher and make it through those hot summers. But there's a whole lot of people that live here that don't. And so what we need to be able to do is to create resiliency for our communities. And in doing so, we might be able to create some resiliency for animals and plants as well. So one of the campaigns that I have often championed is that we need to start focusing on planting native plants in our yards so that animals and plants live in our yards, as well as not using as much water. But the other part of that, and you talked about that very well, is that we need to plant more trees. And I would argue native trees, but more trees. Those trees are going to create shade for people. They're going to create shade for our homes so that we don't have as much heat gain from the hot summers. But they're also going to create habitat for species. And so birds and other animals will be able to live in and around our yards. And in doing so, we will give them a chance to be able to sustain populations, hopefully sustain populations, until this whole climate thing eventually turns itself around. Part and parcel of that is our water management. And I know that the water districts are part of the CBCC committee, but maintaining the water, the aquifer as high as possible so that the native trees can continue to sustain themselves is going to be critical to this. We've done some research that has shown that whereas the aquifer is doing fairly well in many parts of the Coachella Valley in terms of sustaining the wells that feed people or that water people and water agriculture. Some of the natural areas are starting to show the effect of not being able to be in contact with that water table nearly as well. And the mesquite areas around the northern edge of the Coachella Valley are an example of that. And so we have, bat becomes an extremely important component of this whole resiliency, is managing our water resources and our aquifer much, much better, or and looking towards the future in terms of how that impacts habitat for the animals and plants, as well as the people that live here. So great question. We could talk about that for another couple of hours, but I know I don't have that amount of time.
I think, just to kind of expand on my point here, is that I think it's important that we think through as board members, kind of as CVAG as a whole. A lot of us sit on different committees, transportation, executive committee, et cetera. And I've been following efforts, for example, of the city of Sacramento or Phoenix, for example, that they are moving on an effort to try to plant over 400,000 trees over the next 10 to 20 years to try to slow down kind of climate change. And I think, we're as an area, we could really be we're really a big city of 400K or 500K. And so it's important that we really think through as cities and as the county and CVAG, CVCC, et cetera, and really kind of come up with a comprehensive strategy that might help us, achieve our goals here at the CVCC, but, at the same time, kind of create beautification, kind of just keep the Coachella Valley in its beauty just at the forefront, because, tourism is extremely important to what we do, and all of that could be threatened with climate change. So I guess my point, just how do we think through all of our different commissions and really kind of grasp the whole picture of what we can do as a valley?
I think that's an excellent point.
If I can call upon, we've got a couple hands raised, Supervisor Perez and then Councilmember Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Cameron and Lynn, for your presentation. Always great to hear from you, Cameron, and thank you for the history lesson. Really appreciate that. Going back to 1986, I wasn't aware that we were the first pilot project, if we will, experiment the Coachella Valley throughout the Union. That's awesome. And I appreciate your points with Dr. Mayhew, Corky Larson, John Wilmoth, and our today's famous fearless leader, Tom Kirk. So thank you for all that history. But what I'm wondering is, and I guess expanding upon those commissions, to what degree is this commission or not engaged with AQMD, the South Coast Air Quality Management District, especially moving forward with the new study? To what degree was AQMD involved at all with the multi-species habitat plan? Because I sense that there's not much interaction. And I'm wondering if that's an area in which we need to engage more so, knowing that we're talking about climate change and we're talking about reducing greenhouse gas emissions. So that's just one question that I have. And, years ago when I was growing up, we used to go off-roading all over the place. And obviously, that's not the case anymore. And quite frankly, there's people who still appreciate that. Do you see a future in that anywhere in the Coachella Valley, a place that potentially would not hurt natural habitats, would not hurt species, and potentially we can have some of that recreation in the Coachella Valley? So anyways, two questions, but whatever you can answer right now, perfect. Thank you.
Sure. Well, the AQMD question, the most direct involvement we've had with them with the multiple species plan was, that I was aware of anyway, was involved with the need to continue to have sand blowing into the sand dunes. And what potential impact that has with PM10. And so we've worked with them quite a bit and actually gotten some small grants to put sand fencing on some of the preserves to keep the sand in the preserve as opposed to flowing out onto the roadways and in nearby neighborhoods so that the sand grains, which are larger than PM10, don't get crushed by cars and then turn into PM10 and become a health hazard. So other than that, I'm not aware of any ongoing activity with AQMD. I'm sure Tom has a better handle on that than I do.
Well, supervisors raised some linkages that I don't think we have explored and that we probably ought to. And to expand on what Cam mentioned on PM10, one of the great things about this valley is we actually all do work really well together. And Cam's seen that over the past many decades here. On the PM10 front, as many of you know, we run a regional street sweeping program. Mm-hmm. And when we pick up that sand off the roadway, once it's cleaned, we actually deposit it upwind at times to provide a sand source for our sand dune system. So we're trying to think big picture and multidisciplinary. It doesn't always work, but in all the places I've lived, it works better here than just about anywhere.
Yeah, and I would add in terms of the AQMD, obviously we cover a lot of that in energy and environmental resources, but yeah, there's definitely some crossover and not only between the members, but the topics. So something to ponder. I want to make sure we have time for other input, Councilmember Ortiz and then Councilmember Harnick.
Well, I was going to just real quickly answer this second question from the supervisor, which was with off-road vehicles. And this is something that we've thought about quite a bit. And we have identified in the past, and this goes back probably 10 or 15 years with, when we were starting to develop the multiple species plan, and we've said, okay, well, this area would be fine, this, you know, these multiple areas. But it came down to a situation where there were local residents who said, well, yeah, that might be an open space that you could, you're not going to hurt any species, but you're going to create a noise and dust area for my backyard. And so there was a lot of what, you know, are referred to as NIMBY things, were not in my backyard. And as a result of that, they have developed some off-road vehicle areas south, a little bit south of Coachella and east of Thermal that are and will continue to be open to off-road vehicles. There are areas, else, other areas in the Coachella Valley that are not sensitive to multiple species issues. But again, it's this NIMBY issue, is there's already people living so close that they might raise concerns with that. So just wanted to make that point. So whoever's next with their hand raised.
Looks like Ortiz. Oscar, please.
Thank you. I wanted to just jump in on Mayor Hernandez's points as well. You know, seeing how the canal, it has been drying up on us as well. We really need to focus on reducing our water use here, right? And I think we could do both things at the same time, right? As we're converting some of our landscaping to desert landscaping, we can include these different plant species that do promote the growth of certain species that we're trying to take care of here in the valley, and also help cool our homes. And just handle multiple things at the same time. And I think what I wanted to bring up for staff was, I know that our intern was working on two different projects. One was a summary of the conservation projects around the valley, I believe. And I believe the other one was a guideline for which plants to use and how to implement them in our developments to help these issues. So I wanted to see if we can get an update on those two different works.
And both of those councilmen are a part of the Energy and Environment Committee, and will be providing an update at the next meeting.
Very good. Jan, Councilmember Harnick.
Yes, and I will be quick. First, I want to thank Dr. Barrows for all the information you gave me when I wrote that article on tamarisk. And it turned a lot of people around with just having that information, at really how detrimental that is to our valley and to the whole ecosystem. And we were getting ready in Palm Desert to take some down, and we were getting a groundswell of opposition not to take them down. But once they had the information, it quieted down. So thank you very much excuse me for that. All of us on this call have the opportunity to work with our planning departments and permitting departments, that when somebody comes in, a developer, or needs to replace trees, to require them to put native species in rather than bringing in things that bring in the pollen, suck up the water, and really do detrimental impact to our ecosystem. So we all can do that, and it's a small thing, it's an easy thing, and it's an inexpensive thing. That's it, thank you.
So Jan, just quickly off that, do we have a list? Does anybody have a list of native species that we could provide for that kind of development?
Well, you have Dr. Barrow, certainly.
Well, and hasn't CVWD done the whatever, something in Lush, whatever it's called, I mean, a whole book of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then plus we have our intern who was working on what trees. And I agree, Dan, 100% that when new development or any new landscaping is being done, if we can, that's one of the biggest places where we can make change.
Mm-hmm. Simple.
Yeah.
And you're right. CVWD does have a Lush and Efficient landscape book, I believe it's called. I don't know if it's been updated recently. And let's bring this all back to the Energy Environment Committee for a more robust discussion. Mm-hmm. I believe most of your cities and the county do have guidelines. Some are very stringent, and some perhaps could be modernized a bit. So let's take a hard look at that.
Agreed. Again, thank you, Dr. Barrows, and welcome to Dr. Sweet. And we know we'll be seeing you on the trails anyway, Cam. And we expect your son to continue to lead hikes for friends, correct?
He's actually has his own organization now called Cactus to Clouds, but he'll be doing that for them.
Great. Wonderful. Look forward to it. Okay, let's go ahead and move on. We've got a few items on the agenda to take action on, and 6B is the acquisition of a whopping 1.215 acres in the Thousand Palms area, conservation area, but an important 1.215 acres. So, Jim, I think you're out there.
I am, yes. Good morning, commissioners. This is an acquisition of a partial parcel, and we can look at the next slide to see where it is. The red star will come in there. It's in Thousand Palms. And if you go to the next slide, we can see more precisely where it is. It's over there on off of Villa Las Palmas, north of 30th Avenue. It's that's the western part of the parcel. I think there's one more slide. Yeah, there it is. The red portion is what we'd be acquiring. It's surrounded on two sides directly by CBCC land, and on the other sides by CBCC land that's not far away. Thousand Palms is a longtime CBCC concentration area. It's very high priority habitat, and there's a significant threat of development. The habitat's important because it's a critical fluvial sand transport area that supports the original fringe-toed lizard preserve, as well as the rest of the valley, or the preserves in the rest of the valley. There's lots of Coachella Valley milk fetch on the site and in the area. It's habitat for the Palm Springs pocket mouse and the Coachella Valley round-tailed ground squirrel and others. In addition to being in Thousand Palms Conservation Area, it's in what we call, or what the plan designates as Section 8 of that area. And that has a sort of a sub-priority. The plan says that we shall purchase land when it's offered there because of its high-quality habitat. And the plan also requires the CVCC to hold funds for that purpose, a certain amount of funds for that purpose, which we always do anyway. But just to show you that when the plan was drafted, this particular part of Thousand Palms was seen as a very, very high priority. That's reflected in the purchase price because of the highly developable nature of the site. The price is $50,000 for 1.2 acres. It's about $41,000 an acre, about $2,000 in transaction costs. That is comparable with local sales recently for this type of land. The developable land near streets has gotten more expensive in recent months and years, but full funding is available in the land acquisition fund. And staff does recommend approval of Resolution 21-010 And I'm happy to answer any questions at this time.
Thank you, Jim. Questions regarding this potential acquisition? All right, seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Move approval.
And that was
District 2.
District 2. Thank you, Kathleen.
Second, Desert Hot Springs.
Thank you. There is a motion and second. All those in favor, please wave your hand and say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Hearing none, motion passes unanimously. Very good. Okay, item C is the contract extension and additional funds for the In Lieu Fee Program Restoration Development Plan. Katie is.
Hi, good morning, Madam Chair and members of the Commission. I'm here to talk to you today about our In Lieu Fee Program and give you an update on that and have you consider a possible contract extension and additional funds. Next slide, please. This program is actually in the south end of our conservation areas over by the Salton Sea. And if we go forward, it will show you all of our beautiful bright green conservation properties there. The small circle at the bottom there was a 40 acre piece that we actually began this program. We were looking at that possible piece for the In Lieu Fee program. And just to tell you what an In Lieu Fee program is, instead of providing mitigation lands in small parcels when you have a construction project, if you had to go out and provide mitigation, if those are fragmented parcels or fragmented projects, they could possibly be unsuccessful. An In Lieu Fee program allows you to buy credits into a larger program, a restoration program that would be site specific. And so multiple different developers would be able to buy into the program for 404 or 401 permits. And those credits will help to develop the restoration and keep it sustainable over time. So it's a great program. There's about 59 of them throughout the United States. At least there was right before the coronavirus. And so we have been applying to have this program permitted and currently working on the redevelopment or the development and the restoration plan. So that small circle at the bottom was the original parcel that was identified for those projects. It is a 40 acre parcel. That parcel was rejected by California Department of Fish and Wildlife and US Fish and Wildlife Service. It just didn't provide enough connection to downward flows for the waters. So it still has considerable conservation value to us because of the saltbush scrub and other wonderful habitat that's in there. And it's adjacent to the stormwater channel. So it is also in conservation. And we turned our sights in 2017 to the 71 and a half acre parcel that's up on the longer elongated egg-shaped yellow outline on Johnson Street. And that area, if we go forward a little bit, has multiple features. I'm gonna talk about the right-hand side of this slide. You can see the multiple braided different ephemeral washes that go down through the feature. Previously, we've had previous to human development, there were several dry wash woodlands and active floodplains in this area. And so our goals with this restoration plan is to really remove the invasive plant species that you see and restore lost riverine function. So those are beautiful braided washes there that would have flowed down through the area. Unfortunately, there's been several upgrades to the area, fortunately for the agriculture, but unfortunately for the natural features. So you see that there are several different drains here, Johnson Street drain on the right, and what we call the half drain that is on the west and the south end of the property. This has caused a bit of complexity with how would we deal with drainage or how would we redesign the property to offer the best ecological value for the species in the area. And we have several different species that this could provide habitat for, the Yuma Ridgeway's rail, the California Black Rail, and several different habitats, such as there are some mesquite boss or large patches of mesquite out there. But most of what you're seeing in this picture is tamarisk. And so our target would be to remove the tamarisk from the area, to redesign the features so that it would actually collect into an ephemeral pond and provide support for our wetland ecosystem. And so, you know, with the loss of the historic wetland, it's really a kind of a cool project. The history of this project, though, has been a bit troubled. Once we identified the site in 2017, we were approved by CDFW and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to move forward with that site in 2019. And then we asked for an extension to our restoration plan in 2020, given that we have about 3 years to create that plan after after you identify the site. And so we had significant delays in the approval of the process. And then of course, COVID-19 happened and those delays were exacerbated. So at this point in time, we sold about 12.87 credits we're looking at finishing off the restoration plan in this next year and getting approval to move forward with design and build construction on the restoration by September next year. And so with that, we're asking for a contract extension, and staff is recommending approval of an additional $81,438 to the contract so that we can finish this off and get it done. And with that, I'll take any questions. Chair Evans, you're muted.
Thank you. All right, questions for Katie on this? Just a quick trivia question. Do you know how many gallons of water per day a tamarisk tree uses? We learned this on our tour. Who would like to blurt out the answer?
Blurt.
Way too much.
200 gallons.
200 gallons a day. Get rid of those things. All right. You win. Ding, ding, ding. All right. Is there a motion for the contract extension for this?
I'll move to approve.
That would be Oscar. India, yeah. Video makes a motion.
Rachel Morales, second.
Thank you very much, Richard. All those in favor, please say aye. Wiggle the fingers.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Hearing and seeing none, that motion passes unanimously. Very good. We can get that one back on track. One more, memorandum of understanding for cooperative land management and law enforcement activities. I have a few questions on this one, but we'll go with staff report to start.
Wonderful. Thank you. And we have been working on this one for quite a while. As Dr. Barrows mentioned, we are trying to increase the amount of and the duration of time that we have patrols out in different areas on the conservation area. As you might have remembered back when we did the approval earlier this year for Desert Hot Springs Police Department, that we were going to actually have some law enforcement officials out there regularly. So I will give an update on that as well as talk about this particular Sheriff's Department update. So next slide, please. In multiple areas of our conservation properties, there are these specific areas that are, you know, they're basically adjacent to where the cities are. And they provide easy access for those who are going out and doing OHV, illegal OHV activities. This is actually off of the Kim Nickel Trail last winter. And unfortunately, as with all of our vandalism and other issues in the conservation areas during the COVID-19 epidemic, we just kind of saw a burst of activity out there, and we're trying to catch up in terms of enforcement. So this is the Kim Nickel Trail, like I said, and it is in the county area. So the Desert Hot Springs Police Department wouldn't cover this area. Next slide, please. This is also on the north end of that Kim Nickel Trail area. And I will identify that this area has the highest population of French-toed lizards that is being monitored under all of our different Aeolian sand areas. So it is quite some concern to me and to others when we see this amount of activity just kind of burst onto the scene out of nowhere. And of course, we have reported the activity to the Sheriff's Department and the Bureau of Land Management. And in May of last year, they were, or May of this year, 2021, they were able to go out May and July and do a bit of a sting force out there. And so this current MOU will be adding funds so that we can have regular patrols in these areas, and they do already have vehicles to access. Next slide. This is over in the Long Canyon area. As you know, we've been trying to encourage folks to use the new trailhead that's out there. And currently there is a number of off-road vehicle issues on that area. BLM, Sheriff's Department, and Desert Hot Springs Police Department will all be providing support to this area. Next slide, please. And this, of course, is over in our Thousand Palms area. This is some vandalism that has happened recently. As you can see, our post-net cable fence has been removed. And one of the things that these agreements allow for is that there is training to the officers to use our land management systems so that they can put those areas that they find vandalism right into the system and able to report it to us directly. Another wonderful part of this new MOU would be that just having the officers out there and the presence after they make contacts, they are able to, you know, take down the make and model of vehicles and offer citations if they see those vehicles again. So they have been originally working together about 35 contacts, identified stolen vehicles, 2 violations just in this area on the other side as well in Sky Valley. So next slide, please. This is in our Willow Hole area. And one of the concerns that I have about this kind of activity is just, it seems to be a singular activity that is coming from the households that are right nearby. And having more eyes on the area will allow us to at least give them warnings and citations if we see them doing it again. They have also, this particular area is one of the areas that we have baby mesquite. And as you know, we've been having a real hard time restoring our mesquite hummocks. So we want to make sure that they're not trampling over those baby mesquite out there. And this is also in the county area, but just on the edge of that Desert Hot Springs Police Department MOU. Next slide. So as part of this report, I just wanted to give you a brief update on what Desert Hot Springs has been doing. We have provided $25,000 for a vehicle, this beautiful little Ranger Crew 570-4 premium off-road vehicle that was outfitted for the police department. They have been using it extensively since July. They actually got it in July and has been working with the task force at that time with BLM and Riverside Sheriff's Department to go out into different areas of the city and the county. And I have heard that they brought it to the July 4th park to show off to the public and to get the word out that they would be doing more of that patrols. And since then we have 2 officers basically providing weekly support since it started to cool down. They've also worked extensively with our CBAG homelessness program to clear up our work to house a camp that is south of 15th and West in the conservation area, but not necessarily on CVCC properties. Since then, MSWD has worked to get that property fenced, and there's a beautiful new post and cable fence out there. Unfortunately, a lot of our fencing had been previously vandalized. So those officers are working to get some of those points into the land management system. They are also just letting us know weekly about different types of vandalism that they see, new vandalism and stolen vehicles, burned out vehicles, and other vehicles that need to be taken care of. And with that, the agreement actually provides $30,000 for a two-year period. As you might have remembered, the Desert Hot Springs Police Department will be providing $30,000 for 3 years, but it also provided $25,000 for a vehicle. The only amount that we've actually had billed against us for that is reimbursing them the $25,000 for the vehicle. This agreement is specifically for 2 years, $30,000 per year, and we have budgeted $60,000 this year for law enforcement in the conservation areas in this fiscal year. So with that, staff recommends approval, and I'll take any questions.
Thank you very much. Questions regarding this proposed agreement?
Madam Chair, if I may.
Mm-hmm, please.
Yeah, good morning. I do appreciate and very supportive of this, and I think the surveillance and the enforcement opportunities definitely provides opportunities for us to make sure that they're staying off-roading in a very smart manner, and also provides opportunities for preventing illegal dumping. I would just kindly ask if we can get a summary report of those enforcement activities. I'm not sure if that can be done twice a year or annually in terms of how effective the program was. Would that be appropriate, Madam Chair?
Absolutely, and I know that staff will be coordinating because based on the duties required, there's a minimum amount of meetings, et cetera. So that could definitely include a report back to this commission.
Commissioners, we will include an every 6 month report from both the Desert Hot Springs and Sheriff's Department. So we'll make sure that's at least a written report to you and sometimes a presentation as well.
And if I may, my last point is it's important, that we understand those enforcement activities, because I'm assuming down the road, I would like to continue to support these efforts. And as long as we have the science and the activity behind it, we can maybe even consider supersizing it if it's effective. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alex. Gary, the Desert Hot Springs, you want to
go? I'm just going to echo and what Katie said and let you know that our officers out here that are using the off-road vehicle, right now they're having some good success out there. It's just started. We just started, like you said, in July, and with the heat and everything, we're looking forward to seeing how that expands and how it works in the fall. But we have seen some minor drop-offs in a few things. So I think the increased patrols are really helping, and I'm looking forward to echoing what Mr. Cardenas said was about, looking and seeing a year's worth of data after we've got this done, that whether we need to expand it. I think we will. We'll want to expand it to all of our CVCC areas and see where we can get, because we do have quite a bit of land, quite a bit of it out here. It's a lot to cover. And this is sort of a little pilot project out here at DHS. And I think it's so far is showing some promising signs of success. And we did have the vehicle at the 4th of July party, and they've used it in a couple of other school type events, getting kids to know that we'll be out there watching and how they can help us in the conservation lands and things. So it's a great program, but like I said, we're just early in the early months of it, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how it develops over the course of the year. And I would echo, we need to expand this into the sheriff's land. So I think we're at a good start.
Thank you very much. Just I had a question, since it was brought up on the Desert Hot Springs side of things, but I don't see it covered in the report for the proposed agreement. You mentioned homeless encampments, and it looks like largely it's regarding dumping trash, vandalism, need for signage replacement, and things like that. If identified as a mechanism.
So they will report to us when they see a homeless encampment. Currently, we're trying to figure out the best way to have some kind of outreach for those different programs in the county. We don't have the issues in the county that we have in particular parts of Desert Hot Springs because it is so close to the urban wildland interface. You know, there's larger camps there that we have been working with the police department on, as well as our homelessness program.
And did the Sheriff's Department indicate when they would have staff available to start this? Because they're extremely short-staffed, and just making sure there's not overlap with contract cities for resources that will be accommodating this need.
As far as I understand, Chief Henson has actually, they were starting to work with us last a couple months ago, as we were working out in the task force. And as I understand it, Sergeant Walsh will have more, probably, I would have to check on that just to be sure, but they seem to be pretty ready to go with what we have, specifically because of the ROVE program.
Okay. And we also have a raised hand from Stan Henry, contracted with, to assist in facilitating this discussion and agreement with the RSD. So Stan, go ahead. Good to see your name on the screen.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I'm teaching a class right now, so that's why I have the mask on and that. And they're actually engaged in listening to your conversations that we've had. But the Sheriff's Department actually has a dedicated unit, the ROVE unit. They've gotten some state grants to be able to provide the equipment that's available. But they are a unit that has other responsibilities. So by having this agreement, they'll be able to utilize overtime and other time available to do the enforcement in the county areas. One of the other reasons is it's a two-year contract for 3 year or for $30,000 instead of a 3 year, is they have a much greater area that they have to cover all the way from Whitewater down to Thousand Palms and Sky Valley. They've got a greater area that they need to cover to look at the enforcement.
Okay, and thank you very much, Stan. Councilmember Dennis Woods from Palm Springs.
Hi, thank you. Thank you, Kathleen, for the pictures. It's really appreciated. It sets the stage. We can play a cat and mouse game with the police and those who are violating the law for years to come and cost us enforcement money for years to come. I would actually like to see us put more substantial gates in that maybe are more vandal proof than what it appears in those pictures we had, with wires going across. I think that would be a better long-term expenditure of money than continuing to pay for more and more officer compliance, more and more compliance officers. So that's my suggestion.
It's really a good one. And the gates are pretty substantial. Our biggest challenge really, council member, is that we don't control all the land. So we could put gates up sometimes around an entire area, but it's rare. There are access points and the desert, it is wide open. And these vehicles, and some of you of course have some of these vehicles, they could go just about anywhere these days. And so going around over boulders, it's a challenge keeping people out. So I think it really does have to be a balance, but we'll take your advice and take a hard look at the structures that we are putting in.
And if I may, we actually, in that particular picture that you're discussing, the one with the open post and cable, that particular area is hoping to be, we're gonna create more boundary, more of the boulder boundaries in that area to make it more of a significant barrier. If we don't have regular patrols out there and the possibility of folks knowing that we don't have patrols out there, they'll just vandalize those boundaries. So
thank you. And Mayor Hernandez?
Yeah, I'm just in terms of what their authority is on the patrol, are they citing folks? Are they just warning and educating folks. And I'm wondering if there might be a lesson that we can learn from efforts, for example, when there's people that are illegally dumping. You know, they folks will actually, you know, there's cameras that governments have installed, agencies have installed, and they get a ticket. You know, they get cited. So I'm wondering if there's a strategy there that we could maybe look at as opposed to just or keeping patrol. So
absolutely. The remote cameras are part of the strategy to get them installed in some of the higher dump areas so we can get people on photograph of them doing that kind of thing. The problem with the cameras is they do get stolen. So you have to kind of have a camera on a camera sometimes to make sure that you're catching that kind of activity. We will definitely pursue more of the alternatives for dumping because we do have to catch them in the act of doing it.
And as Stan, well as, could you address the enforcement question?
Citations.
Sure. Yes, the enforcement question. Yes, they are originally the first round is to go out and to provide warnings. They'll pull them over. They'll talk to them. They'll provide warnings and they'll tell you if we see this vehicle out here again, if we see your OHV out here again, you will have a citation. And at that point, so there's an initial outreach component and just trying to educate folks that this is not acceptable behavior. And then the citation comes later.
Yeah, just, you know, just concerning that you have a group of neighbors that are not necessarily heeding the warning. And so, you know, there's carrots and sticks, and we might be at a point where we got to get some sticks.
Yeah,
I would agree on the first offense dumping for sure if they see that.
I don't think that's negotiable. It's mostly just the OHV warnings.
Supervisor Perez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to elaborate on that. That's obviously everyone knows when they are illegally dumping that it's against the law. It's illegal. And that shouldn't be a warning. I can see if someone happens to be riding their quad and you give them a warning, they get caught again, then you know, potentially they get some sort of, you know, penalty or whatever they're going to get, but a ticket of some sort. But illegal dumping by no means.
Right.
No tolerance.
If we be warning them, and quite frankly, as well, the penalty should be high. You know, I don't know what it is right now, but you know, years ago we had a campaign on illegal dumping, and we put billboards up throughout the eastern Coachella Valley. I don't know if we have those throughout the entire Coachella Valley, but you know, something saying illegal dumping is illegal, and you're going to be fined this amount of money just to maybe hopefully, you know, prevent it from happening. So anyway, that's just my two cents.
We are also working on a campaign with Burtech and the County of Riverside to identify those areas that we know are overrun with dumping that need extra enforcement, but also could use specific signs right up in front and that say, this is gonna be your citation if you're caught, and that's hopefully will help to deter some of it, but if we have the enforcement to back it up, I'm sure that we'll see better.
What's the amount? Do we know?
I don't know what the citation is. I am sorry, I can look that up for you and get back to you.
Okay, it's gotta be something that's gonna really cause people to think twice.
I can tell you here in DHS, we've got an agenda item coming up to increase our fines $10,000. We'll be putting up a billboard and an outdoor advertising campaign on that here in the city, as well as signage out there. I think the thing that prompted it, I wish I could share it with you right now, but earlier this summer, one of the small signs that just says no dumping here, somebody decided to either do a joke or do it intentionally and put an entire apartment's worth of furniture around that sign out in the desert. And, you know, we saw that and we went, all right, this is it. We're done with this. We're done messing around. And so, like I said, we've got it should be on the agenda this next week for increasing our fines out here to 10,000.
Yeah, it says up to 10,000 in terms of the state of California Penal Code 374.3. And then it looks like there's some varied first offense, second offense, up to 10,000. So I guess my question would be, and I know I'll go to Councilmember Ortiz real quick, based on the bells and whistles that are available and the resources with Riverside Sheriff, would they not be able to employ drone surveillance while they're monitoring as well, since you're not talking about infringement and property if it's conservation land, and if it's a matter of them being in one area but covering a vast amount of acreage via drone surveillance, would that potentially identify people that might be, you know, back in an area they may not visually see upon entry points?
Stan, do you want to address that?
You know, it's going to be, the drones are obviously by county or city ordinance on the use of them. I don't think you have to deal with the invasion of privacy because the lands are open and stuff. So you probably would be able to utilize drones in doing the enforcement. So again, it's drones are an issue, privacy. And if you're not violating or having any issue of privacy, you have the more availability to being able to utilize them.
Thank you. Councilmember Ortiz?
I like the drone idea as well. And I also want to just add a note that for another way to curtail the illegal dumping is letting people know about the Vertex programs where they build, pick up four bulky items every week for you, right? So I know I've been talking to people about that, and a lot of people don't know about that program. So we're going to do a little bit more outreach on our social media and make sure people know about that. It's going to be easier for them than to go dump it somewhere, right? We'll just come pick it up for you. Thanks.
I know DHS has been doing a lot of that as well, because it is available. It's free. It's convenient. Put it on the curb. It's just not hard. I just don't get it. It's amazing. All right. Good discussion on this. Good questions.
Ready to move the item.
Thank you. Kathleen Kelly Palm Desert made the motion.
I'll second it.
I'll throw out Gary Gardner from Desert Hot Springs for the second with the multiple echoes. All right. All those in favor, please say aye and or with your hand. Aye.
Aye.
And any opposed or abstentions? Seeing none, that motion passes unanimously. Well, all right. Let's see what they can get done. And hopefully we'll be able to curtail some of that, and that word will spread. All right. Our final action item would be the election of CVCC officers. Annual process, Tom, brief overview. I know staff reports there.
Yeah, we do this every year. Your chair is Mayor Evans. Your vice chair is Mayor Hernandez. And let's open up the floor for nominations for one or either position or both. Kathleen Fitzpatrick.
I nominate Linda Evans to continue. I think her leadership is excellent and we should just continue on. Thank you.
All right. Any other nominations for chair? Is there a second to that nomination?
Just glad you won.
All right. All, and hearing no other nominations, are there?
Is there anybody? Let me jump in and ask a question. Mayor Hernandez, are you okay with that? I mean, that's fine with me, but can't hear you.
I'm fine with that.
Perfect.
May we add a nomination to continue Mayor Hernandez as vice chair, make it a package?
And I would second that.
All right. Why don't we amend the first nomination, if that's all right, to have the tandem of chair and vice chair be Mayor Evans and Mayor Hernandez. Is that acceptable to you, Kathleen Fitzpatrick, and you, Glenn Miller?
Yep.
Yes, it is.
All right. Anybody opposed to re-electing the two? And everybody in favor, say yes.
Yes.
Aye.
Aye.
It's unanimous. Congratulations again.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Pleasure to serve. Continue on. The informational items are there. I know that we had a request to speak, and Randy Binder asked about the progress on the bighorn sheep, which is information item number E. I don't know if Jody wanted to, if there was a specific question that Randy had, or if you wanted to connect with him offline for that, or if anybody has any questions or comments on that particular update.
We could certainly connect with him offline and ask him if he has some specific questions about that. We're still going through the process. It's not as easy as it might sound to put a fence up over very challenging terrain with multiple property owners, but we seem to be close.
Good. Okay. And do we have any requests to speak on non-agenda items, Tricia?
We didn't get any emailed requests and nobody's raising their hands at this time.
Very good. Any other announcements besides our upcoming meeting, which is November 18th, again on Zoom at 10:30? All right, seeing none, we will go ahead and adjourn the meeting. Thank you very much for your time and your input. Thanks, staff, for your work. Welcome to Jody, and thanks again to Dr. Cam Barrows for his work, and glad he's at Emeritus. That means we can call upon him and at a bargain. Wink. Maybe sometime at General Assembly, right? And have a little preview, and he can come back and see the progress of what we're doing here. But with that, thank you very much. And the meeting's officially adjourned. Appreciate
thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Take care.